Okay, now, if you take a view of this for a second, can we get those lights? Who's going to get those? Okay, all right. If you take a view of this for a second, there are lots of ways to, wrong ones, there's lots of ways to, thank you very much, to understand the concept here of what's actually happening. If we look at inheriting all things together, we can do it selfishly. We can look at it inwardly. Or we can consider that the world is approached by God and they're not spiritually oriented. And this is how he does it. This is how he talks to humanity. And for us to be able to deal with humanity, whether no matter what religion they're in, no matter what, it's actually the first three there on that side. The idea that human beings would have any contact with God at all that makes any sense, is it eludes us, the way we would talk to humanity. However, God isn't cowed at all. After all, consider, he called us. So humans actually are basically spiritually challenged. Obviously, we know that anything we understand that's not normal human knowledge is a gift from God. And so when we go to talk to human beings about how to explain this concept of unity, where we all inherit what God's giving us, we need godly humility. And godly humility is something God delivers even to those who aren't converted, who aren't understanding. And the way he does that is fascinating. So let's take this method of looking at it. Glory, and this is a very important word today, glory and honor are going to be shared. Look here. In the 8th Psalm, O Lord, our Lord, how excellent is your name in all the earth. How excellent can it be, right? Who have set your glory among the heavens. Now, why that's important isn't apparent right now. That he set his glory above the heavens. But we'll begin to get a clue as to why it's important here. When I consider your heavens and the work of your hands, the moon and the stars that you have ordained, what is man that you are mindful of him, that you're conscious of him, that you even think about him, and the son of man that you visit him? For you have made him a little lower than the angels. And what? Crowned him with glory and honor. And you've made him to have dominion over the works of your hands. You have put all things under his feet. At the top in each psalm, it says his glory is above the heavens, and he crowned humanity with that glory. But look at this, though. This is the modification of it, because in the New Testament, that continues on in Hebrews 2:8. You have put all things in subjection under his feet. For in that he put all in subjection under him, he left nothing that is not put under him. But now we do not see all things put under him. Now this is going to come up again and again as we go through this. Again and again and again, we're going to see this concept of glory being shared. So let's take a look at inheriting in humble unity. We can academically understand the concept of inheriting together. People have inheritance, and they can inherit together. A family can inherit. It's easy enough to understand how God really promised everyone who enters his family and his kingdom that they are going to inherit the kingdom. Until we begin to understand how that could possibly work. Each family member can't really own everything, can they? Can they? Well, what things are we to inherit? Here's the first thought to consider. Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. Why did God say that when he tells us we'll inherit all things later? Why does he say that? Why does he say we'll inherit the earth? We'll cover that. We'll cover that. But the bottom line to all of this is that, in fact, we're going to be responsible for the earth. We actually will. It's our job to cover the earth. I'm going to see if we can get this to actually work here. Let me get it to go back. Hold on a second. It doesn't want to pay attention to me. Okay. I'll fight the thing. Here we go. Make it go back. No, it doesn't want to. Okay. This is the worst part of the earth, where the earth is in charge. What we would have seen before was how the earth is beautiful and it's functioning and it's something we can be over. But this part of the earth where we have storms that are out of our control, where we have volcanoes and calderas like Yellowstone Park out of our control, and tornadoes like this one out of our control, all of that actually ends up being something that we are responsible for fixing. We're actually responsible for it. And that ultimately is going to be something we have to work with. Now, obviously, here this thing isn't going to work on me. So let me pull that out. Hold on a second. What are we going to inherit? Okay, well, obviously, we saw this part, that we're going to inherit the earth. Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. But then he says this in Revelation 21. He who overcomes shall inherit all things, and I will be his God, and he'll be my son. Well, will there be more than one person who overcomes and inherits all things? Of course. So how does that work? Why would it work? How are we to understand that in humility and work together? Well, this is how we start. In Job 38, God approaches humanity through this story with Job. The Lord answered Job out of the whirlwind and said, "Who is this who darkens counsel by words without knowledge?" You don't even know what you're talking about. Now prepare yourself like a man. I'll question you, and you shall answer me. Where were you when I laid the foundations of the earth? Tell me if you have understanding. Where were you? Now, this isn't a computer-generated earth. This is a shot from the European Space Station. And in case you're not aware of what that is, that's Suez. And if you were going to come down from the heaven and land in Jerusalem, it would be about there. It would be, you'd kind of see it look like this. And we're going to inherit this place. This is the Black Sea. And you think about the place that we'll inherit. We inherit the earth first. We start here. We start here with the kingdom. The kingdom comes to the earth. God ultimately, over time, brings his temple, his city, his holy city, to Jerusalem, to the earth. It's astounding. What this is actually in real time, as they're coming over, as they're going around the earth. That's how fast the moon sets. That's astounding. And we inherit all this. Of course, we haven't seen anything yet, because today, not only will we understand how humanity is humbled by God, but we have to be humbled to be able to help them be humbled. How does God humble humanity? That way. And then there's another way. He does this. He said to Job, the Lord answered Job out of the whirlwind and said, prepare yourself like a man. I'm going to question you. You're going to answer me. This is like a father talking to a grown son. Would you indeed annul my judgment? Would you condemn me that you may be justified? Have you an arm like God? Or can you thunder with a voice like his? Okay, then adorn yourself with majesty and splendor and array yourself with glory and beauty and disperse the wrath, the rage of your wrath. Look on everyone who is proud and humble him. Job couldn't do that. Look on everyone who's good, proud, and bring him down low, and tread down the wicked in the place, and hide them in the dust together, and bind their faces in hidden darkness. And then I will also confess to you that your own right hand can save you. This is how God humbles humans. What is it? He showed them creation. This is how he does it. He doesn't spank them necessarily, although there's a time coming when that has to happen. But this is how, when someone is ready to be humbled, he does it. And it did work with Job. Are we ready to be humbled? So this time we're going to consider what we will inherit. It's first the earth, then all things. How are we going to work with our inheritance anyway? And it will be different from this current world, and how will it be different? And by the way, how does this inheritance show us unity now? Because it does. And unity in this age, in the church, in God's family, is possible because of what we're about to see. And I'm not saying that as my opinion. It's how God deals with us. We're human too. All. What's included in all? What's not included in all? Do we actually inherit all? I mean, do you get a section of all? Not really all. Do we each just get our own apportionment of all? Or does everybody inherit everything? That can't work, can it? Just can't possibly be true. Can it, if you really think it through? And there it is. The biggest place we can go. Well, unless we're an astronaut, and maybe we could go to the moon, but that's not as big as this. Biggest place we are able to go. The old joke about the guy who took a trip around the world, and he said, what are you going to do next? He said, well, I'll go somewhere else. There is nowhere else. Big. That's the concept. Earth is really big. This is from the Discovery Channel, by permission. The sun is 1 million times larger than Earth. 1 million times. And then, of course, there's Eta Carinae, 1 million times larger than the sun. And then there's Betelgeuse. These are stars. And that's as big as it gets. Nothing bigger than that. Oh, well, yeah. This is VY Canis Majoris. This is 1 billion suns. Where's the sun anyway? On there. Not there. Too small. 1 million times larger than Earth. Earth is the largest thing we know that we can live on. I can't even see it in relationship to the largest star we know. But you know what? We're part of the Milky Way galaxy. It's 100,000 light years across. If you could travel at the speed of light, it would take 100,000 years to get across that. So it's enormous. We used to think it was the whole universe until we found out there was at least one other galaxy. It's called Andromeda, and it's 3 times bigger. So Milky Way isn't very large, and then there's that thing. This is M87. And then there's this monster. This is IC-1011. It's 6 million light years across. There are 60 Milky Ways that could fit in there. That's the largest galaxy we know of, because we can't really see galaxies and measure them well in other areas of the universe, but this galaxy we can see. Remember Milky Way? It's not as big as that dot. 100,000 light years across. So we've seen the Earth, then the Sun, the VY Canis Majoris, then the Milky Way, now this thing. Who runs all this? Right now, who's in charge of all this? Well, we already know in God's church, we know who's in charge of all of this. We get it. But who knows how big it is? Our mind, as we go through this, by the way, we won't be able to comprehend it. Obviously, there's no way our minds can comprehend it, but God knows. In the 147th Psalm, he says, he counts the number of the stars. And he calls them by name. In Isaiah 40, it's just a little conversation. Hey, just look at the night sky. Who do you think made that? Who marches this army of stars out each night and counts them off and calls them by name? So magnificent, so powerful, and never overlooks a single one. Who does that? Job 9. He commands the sun, and it does not rise, and he seals off the stars. He knows where they all are. He knows what they're there for. He knows how they work. And the size of all this is literally impossible to understand. We've already done that by looking at B.Y. Canis Majoris, and bottom line to that is, that's nothing. It's peanuts to what we're about to see in a little bit. Now, you've heard of this. Many of us have actually already seen this. It's called the Hubble Deep Field. In that picture, there are 3,000 galaxies. And in 2004, over 11 days, and 400 orbits into space, there was nothing to see except this little tiny spot right down here. And we won't even see it just yet. We'll have to wait till we get there. There, by the way, just to be quite accurate about it, there is a Hubble Deep Field North and a Hubble Deep Field South. We're going to look at the South. This is the South. Now, this is a composite picture. It's a still picture made by Hubble in 400 orbits in over 11 days. It took them to get this. And why they did this was for no other reason than curiosity. Human beings just having curiosity. What's in this little tiny space down here, right? What is that? So they focused on it. There's nothing there. And then because they focused on it, they began to notice there actually is something. There are a couple of objects in there. And the more they looked, and the more pictures they took, and the more they composited them together, the more they began to see that they were looking back in time at literally hundreds more galaxies. And then the Jet Propulsion Laboratory took the measurements of the redshifts, which show how far away the galaxies are, and did this animation. Those aren't stars. Those are entire galaxies. And we're looking back here nearing 3.7 billion years. 3.7 billion light years is how long the light from this place took to get here. And this was hidden to mankind until the Hubble Space Telescope, 400 orbits, 11 days, pointed at nothing. It's just how human beings are. We want to find out things. So this is, if you will, the edge of the visible universe, which, by the way, isn't the edge. They know that now. Good question. Can all this be inherited? Now, who could make that happen? Well, God can. Prove it. Who could allow us inheritance in God's family, in God's church? Well, obviously, in Revelation 4, we see, after these things I looked, and behold, a door standing open in heaven. And the first voice which I heard was like a trumpet speaking to me and said, come up here, and I'll show you things which must surely take place after this. And immediately I was in the Spirit. And behold, a throne set in heaven, and one sat on the throne. And just so you understand, They were very comfortable in that first century with saying things like, immediately I was in the spirit. They had understood the concept of dealing with spirit beings. They understood the concept of this. Paul talked like this as well. You are worthy, O Lord, in verse 11. You are worthy, O Lord, to receive glory, and there it is again, to receive glory and honor and power, for you created all things, and by your will they existed, exist, and were created. Okay, so he made it by his will. Now, what's that got to do with you and me and the price of tomatoes? Well, this, Revelation 3, to him that overcomes will I grant to sit with me in my throne, even as I also overcame, and am set down with my Father in his throne. Why is that important? Well, first of all, it's overcome. It isn't just endure. It's overcome. So hanging out isn't how we make it into the kingdom. It's overcoming and changing to become like God. And then we'll be granted to sit in his throne with him. In Revelation 22:12, and behold, I come quickly, and my reward is with me to give to everyone according to his work. So that's who allows us this inheritance. He made it, and he can give it to us. Now, just to orient us, you may not think of this as important right now, but remember this. God, Jesus Christ the Father, are incorruptible. They're spirit. They're incorruptible. Yet, the physical universe is theirs to give. They own us. We're physical. So, well, why are you telling us that? It's important to know. It is. You'll see. All right. From the very large, let's take a look. We've been looking at kind of very large things, like galaxies, right? Suns. But from the very large to the very small, to the subatomic, we're going to inherit everything. Let's start here. I'm going to take a look at the globe. There it is. That's Earth off there in the distance. Let's go in real quick now. We'll go down to a city, and then down to a tree, then down to a leaf, down to a blade of grass, and then to a drop of water, and to a paramecium in that water, and then to the paramecium's DNA, and ultimately the molecule of the DNA, and then finally the atoms in the molecule, and finally the quarks in the atom. And we inherit all that because God made it and owns it all. So down to the smallest thing. How can we inherit? Well, look at this. In Hebrews 2, in verse 10, in bringing many sons to glory, it was fitting that God, for whom and through whom everything exists, should make the author of their salvation perfect through suffering. In bringing many sons to, what is that word? Glory. He will make them perfect, okay, through suffering. Both the one who makes men holy and those who are made holy are of the same family. Somehow, religion has missed this. So Jesus is not ashamed to call them brothers. When he says, and we're told by inspired scripture, that we will be like him, we'll see him as he is, that's what it means, bringing many sons, family members of the God family, to glory. And his glory is above the heavens. Now, how can we inherit? In Daniel 4, this is from the Treasury. It's an obscure translation, but it's a good one in this case. Daniel 4, 3, his miracles are staggering. His wonders are surprising. His kingdom lasts and lasts, and his sovereign rule goes on forever. And you're going to share in that. Well, you'll own it all, along with everyone else who owns it. So obviously sharing, inheriting in humility, is how it's going to have to work. 1 Corinthians 15, in verse 50, now this I say, brethren, that flesh and blood cannot inherit the kingdom of God, nor does corruption inherit incorruption. So we cannot inherit a spiritual earth and the spiritual kingdom that God's bringing, ultimately, if we're corrupt and we cannot be in the family that is spiritual, spirit, without being turned into spirit as well. However, the Father and the Son own physical things, corrupted and corrupting things. Okay? So why talk about that? Okay, best short answer, we will inherit the earth and it still will be physical. When we inherit it, it will be changed, but in the beginning, it will be physical. So what's that got to do with you and me? We better understand now how to deal with physical humanity in the physical place that we are. Because that's what we'll be at least 1,000+ years dealing with this. I thought it was all going to be fixed when I'm resurrected. Well, we'll be spirit, but we'll be dealing with a physical earth and physical people. The remnant of Israel, for one, coming back. Okay? All right. There's work to be done. But there will be no corruption in the family. 1 John 3:1-3, behold, what manner of love the Father has bestowed on us. This is language very similar to what David was saying in the 8th Psalm, that we should be called children of God. Therefore, the world doesn't know us because it just didn't know him. So how could it know us? Now, beloved, we are now the children of God. And it hasn't yet been revealed what we'll be, but we know that when he's revealed, we'll be like him. Obviously, when he comes, when he's coming the second time, we will be changed in a moment, in the twinkling of an eye, for we shall see him as he is. And of course, you can't look at God as a human. So how in the world could we see him? We'd have to be in the family with him. And everyone who has this hope in him purifies himself just as he is pure. Now, that language belies something, and that is, obviously, we have to allow the purification. We have to cooperate with the purification. We are not righteous of ourselves. So God allows us to allow him. We are cooperating in a family here. We're working together, inheriting together in humility. And the first thing God does to get our attention is to say, look at what I made. You can't do it. That's what we're doing now. And here's Christ's desire. John 17, and a few months from now we'll be talking about this. This is Christ's prayer, among other prayers. John 17, in the first two verses. Jesus spoke these words, this is on the night of Passover, lifted up his eyes to heaven and said, Father, the hour's come. Glorify your Son. Glorify, there it is again. Glorify your Son, that your Son may also glorify you. As you have given him authority over all flesh, that you should give eternal life to as many as you have given him. This is about family. This is about unity. This is about being together. This is about basically having glory together. John 17:10. All mine are yours. There you go. That's how it works. And all yours are mine, and I'm glorified in them. And verse 22 of John 17, and the glory which you gave me, I have given them. And that they may be one just as we are one. So when we understand that his glory is above the heavens, it's pretty hard to worry about the latest bills. Because we have this glory in us. Doesn't it say that? There is a family unity desire, and Christ gave his life horribly, punished unjustly for this. Not to just answer our prayers, not just for us to get along, but for us to be like him. And why would he do that? Well, we have to give up our self-oriented priorities to understand. And by the way, it's important for us to grasp that if this is beyond us completely spiritually and what we're talking about here, it's hard to explain it. So let's try really hard. Philippians 3, verse 7. This is Paul speaking to the church of Philippi. But what things were gained to me, These I have counted loss for Christ. Education, experience, talent, possessions, relationships, loss. Count them loss. Yeah, but no. Yes. Verse 8, yes indeed, or yet indeed, I also count all things lost for the excellency of the knowledge of Christ Jesus my Lord, for whom I have suffered the loss of all things and count them as rubbish, that I might gain Christ. That sounds religious, except in fact, it's not so much religion as fact. It's just how it is. It's not about religious organization here. This is about counting this world's problems and affairs and priorities as rubbish, so that we can gain what Christ is doing. And God's trying to get through to humanity by saying, look at what I've done. Could you please stop talking about yourselves? Verse 9, and be found in him, not having my own righteousness. There it is again. We have no righteousness in us. We don't originate it. It comes from God. We cooperate with it, but it comes from him, which is from the law. Righteousness from the law comes from us. But that which is through faith, meaning trusting Christ when we don't understand what he wants, why he wants it, and still cooperating with him, the righteousness which is from God by faith, that I may know him, and this is important, the power of his resurrection and the fellowship of his sufferings, being conformed to his death, and by any means I may attain to the resurrection from the dead. I want you to think about this a minute. How many people have been resurrected to God life? How many? One. How much power does it take a human being and turn them into a member of the God family? Well, apparently a lot, because he said, I'd like to know the power of that. If by any means, I don't care what I have to do, by any means, well, legally, with any means, I attain to the resurrection of the dead. I want that power. I want to know what it's like. I want to go through that. It happened once, the firstborn, and it's only happened once so far, among many brethren to come. And they will be inheritors of everything we've seen, and, oh yeah, what we will see now. This is an interesting concept. In Isaiah 45, God says, for thus says the Eternal, who created the heavens, who is God, who formed the earth and made it, who has established it, who did not create it in vain, but formed it to be inhabited. I am the Lord, and there is no other. In Hebrew, the way these words are formed, it could also refer to all this up here. The heavens could be referred to as being created to be inhabited. You know, it's not sure, because you'd have to ask Isaiah what he was saying, but and what God means by what that says. But we know for a fact that the earth was created to be inhabited, and we don't see any other places being inhabited, do we? So that we know for sure. Created to be inhabited. What glory really is there now? It's important for us to know there is glory now. Well, the spirit creation will supplant the physical creation. That's obviously going to happen. God says, I will make all things new. I will create the earth new. I will make a new earth and a new heaven. He says all that. But how magnificent is God's current creation? Well, he's going to do away with that, so we don't have to think about it. Well, we better think about it for at least 1,100 years. Now, this is from the American Museum of Natural History, and it's in partnership with the Rubin Museum of Art. And we're about to see what represents every physical body in size and location and scale as we know them now in what's called the digital universe. And this is by permission of the Hayden Planetarium. For those who've seen this, you're going to see it again. And it goes by pretty fast. We're going to start on the highest place on Earth. By the way, don't forget, this is two scale. Actual measurements, every place on Earth, and then ultimately every place in the universe, to the very edge of it. Wonder how long that's going to take us, right? Two things. First, everybody's seen models of the Earth and the Moon. Here's the little Moon. Here's the Earth. The Moon goes around the Earth. How far is the Moon from the Earth? About 250,000 miles, right? How far is that? You can take every planet in the solar system, Saturn, Jupiter, the big boys, every planet in the solar system, and put them in a line between the Earth and the Moon, and they fit with extra room left over. Now 250,000 miles seems a little farther. So when we see the model of the Moon going around the Earth, it's out there, way, way, way out there. And that's just the Moon. Okay. Highest point on Earth is not the tallest mountain on Earth. The highest point on Earth is not the tallest mountain on Earth. Mount Everest is the highest point. It's not the tallest mountain. Where's the tallest mountain? The old island of Hawaii. It's 31,000 feet tall. How come we don't see it? It's from the ocean bottom to the top of it. Okay? All right. Here we go. We're going to start in the Himalayas now. There we go. So this is called the Known Universe from the American Museum of Natural History, Rubin Museum. And it shows the known universe is mapped through astronomical observations. Every satellite, moon, star, planet, all represented to scale. And in as best as we know, correct measured from according to the best scientific research to date. By the way, as of this week, there are more things to show. Okay, we start in the Himalayas, go up from Mount Everest. We're looking at Tibet there. And obviously you can see the curvature of the Earth as we go up. Pretty big place. Biggest place we know, at least our experience, the Earth. Biggest thing we know. And outside of Earth, we've managed to throw up a bunch of satellites that really show how powerful human beings are. We've got all kinds of things flying around out there. Some in low Earth orbit, 200 miles up, some 750 miles up, some 1,000. Actually, a few 25,000 miles out. Those are artificial satellites as best as we can measure them, where they are at any given time. The Air Force knows where they are. They also know where all the junk is that's still up there, too. Pretty powerful, we human beings. Look at all the things we put up there in the universe. It's flying around out there. Amazing. Aren't we something? By the way, there's the Moon's orbit at 250,000 miles out. And then there's the Earth in orbit around the Sun and the rest of the planets. And those are the orbits of the three inside planets. And then let's go outside and take a look at some of the bigger boys. So now we're going to see the whole solar system. There it is in measurement. That's accurate. There's our solar system. And, you know, going back to the measurements, these stars are where they are supposed to be, accurately, and the sun's true brightness. When it's compared to other stars, let it go a little farther back. And by the way, in 1927, we began broadcasting radio signals. And in 1927, they've been traveling at the speed of light. That's how far they've got. Look how far they've got. Look how far they've gotten. And this is the Milky Way. Our radio signals haven't gone very far. And by the way, the Milky Way is pretty tiny compared to the area where all the other galaxies called the local group are. And there's a giant wall that is out there. And now as we pull back, we see empty spaces. That's where we haven't mapped yet. I can explain how that's all mapped. If you want to talk after services, I'll explain that. And the further out we go, we see what are called quasars. They're the furthest objects we can measure, except for the light from the Younger Universe, which Pangaeus and Wilson found in 1979. So that's what they say the afterglow of the Big Bang is. And that's across that bubble, it's hard to comprehend, obviously, 78 billion light years. You say, well, wait a minute, the universe, they say, is only 13.7 billion. Yeah, well, across the diameter of the outer parts of the galaxy we know, or the universe we know, 78 billion. Let's look for Earth here. It's bound to be here somewhere. Let's see if we can find the Earth here. Going back home. There it is. Okay. There's the Earth. All right. Oh, no. That's not the Earth. That's the Milky Way. It just looked like the Earth from that distance. Now, let's find the Earth. It's in here. Inherit all this and everything else we've seen. Where is it? Is it down here? Where is it? Down here? Is that it? Oh, here it is. Here it is. There's the Earth. Yeah. Okay. No, that's the solar system. The Earth is a lot smaller than the solar system. It's the third planet from the sun. Let's how far in do we have to go to get to the third planet? There it is. Finally. There it is, right there. And we can't even see the orbit of the moon yet. There's the orbit of the moon, 250,000 miles away. You can fit all the planets between the Earth and that orbit. And now let's go down and take a look at the Earth again. That gives us a slight set of perspectives that Job wasn't given. The idea that God hung this in space. He founded this. We didn't. He founded the quarks that hold it up, the molecules, the atoms, everything held together by his laws, by his strength, by his power, and he built it, and he owns it, and he's going to share it with you if you overcome until the end. As we circle around, we're looking at continents that have slammed together. India slammed up into what we call Asia now. As it did go 90 miles an hour, it took millions of years, at least, that's what they say, and it raised up the Himalayas, or Himalayas. And so, here's the tallest place on Earth. Wow. All right. Big deal now. After going to the edge of the universe, big deal. Turns out, by the way, that they have now found, with another instrument, what the digital universe hasn't shown is that they now know there's more out there. In fact, they're actually able to measure the fact that something is pushing this all apart. And at the rate it's being pushed apart, the universe would be well over 100 billion times bigger than we think it is. And that the observable universe would be as, to the actual universe, as an atom is to the universe. I can follow that. Of course you can. I can. And God built it. Now, it's not yet fully the kingdom, not yet. The 144th Psalm says the same thing the 108th Psalm says, but it says something else in addition. Lord, what is man that you take knowledge of him? Why would you even think about him? Or the son of man that you're mindful of him? By the way, you can see on a good night about 6,000 stars. That's what David was looking at when he said, I'm looking at this, how in the world do you even think about us? But verse 4, look, man is like a breath. His days are like a passing shadow. Maybe we can understand how valuable we really are, human beings and their desires and wants and priorities, compared to God. Don't have a leg to stand on. And Jeremiah 17 says the strangest thing. Thus says the Lord, cursed is the man who trusts in man, because obviously they can't help us, and makes flesh his strength, whose heart departs from the Lord. Now, you may not be able to do this right now, but you might want to think about this. You write it down and think about it later and pray about it. How much of your life, I have to ask myself, how much of my life am I concerned about, and how much are you concerned about what others think? and how they've either offended or made you happy, or how they've hurt others and that you need to fix that. Two men had an argument in a car. One got out, started the bang on the window of the other one yesterday. So the first one just killed him. That solves that. Turns out the man who was banging on the window was an NFL football star. But hey, human beings bother us. Why? Human beings elevate us. Why do we make human beings our strength? After seeing what we've seen here, let's consider maybe stopping that. That's how unity works. We'll all inherit all things. Then, and envision perfect unity right now, or we won't be there. If we don't have a relationship that is forgiving of everything everyone else has done, not demanding punishment of everyone else for their problems, if we can't do that, if we can't allow God to get us to that place where we're allowing others to live, no matter how bad they are in our minds, we just won't be in the kingdom if we don't have a relationship with God who feels that way about you and I. How much have I offended God today? What did you do wrong to Him today? And you're still, and I'm still, breathing. We're allowed in this universe where we're nothing to be here because He cares for us, and we don't really know what we're doing unless we listen to Him. And we're going to have to envision what He's going to do and inherit in perfect unity then. Look at this. John 14, God wouldn't have said this. Why would He waste our time? Let not your heart be troubled. Will you stop it? You believe in God, believe also in me. In my Father's house are many mansions. If it weren't so, I would have told you. I go to prepare a place for you. And if I go and prepare a place for you, I will come again and receive you to myself, that where I am, you will be also. Let not man be your strength, nor trust in humans. They are not your helper. Inherit in perfect unity. Daniel 12:3. Those who are wise, who listen, who cooperate, who work with God's Spirit and His mind and His way of life, shall shine, what? Like the brightness of the firmament. That's speaking of the glory that they will have. And those who turn many to righteousness, like the stars forever and ever. How would you turn someone to righteousness? I know. Let's all have a big group today after we're done, obviously after we're through eating. That's first. And then we'll all get our coats on and go out the door and go through this neighborhood and bang on doors and turn many to righteousness. Or live like God and they will see it. And we can't live like God on our own strength, on our own ideas, on our own study, on our own wisdom and experience and talent. We have to live like God who is in us, tells us. And then shine like the stars forever and ever in perfect unity. When the kingdom is established and God has come here and brought His holy city to this planet, and He's made the earth and heaven, by the way, that word heaven in Revelation 20 verse 1 implies probably just the atmosphere, but nonetheless, that's another subject entirely. But when we go out from here, because the kingdom will have no end, when we go out from here, to populate, to create, to do more than just this planet. As God's children with glory, as we do that, that's the end of it, right? Well, it's actually not the end of God's eternal plan. We just We just see glimmers of what he's really doing. And we know where he's going to do it. This isn't even the beginning of the end. But it will be the end of the beginning. May we all understand that when God tells us, please understand me, I'm telling you all this for your good. I want you to understand I'm greater than you are. I've got you. I've got you. Trust me, live by my life, follow me, do not try to work around me, do not try to find reasons to not do what I'm telling you. Don't try to live your own life. And that is exactly what we started in Eden, and we've been doing it ever since. Ask God for his guidance, and then follow it. It's easy for me to say, right? It is the thing a human is born to do. Follow God. And it is then the end of the beginning.